Devalinga Pritichanam Charbanur Deva Shamshadi Pravishta Somam Api Bhach Chandra Kabhyam Chashruchitaham. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat. Rahu, the demon who causes the eclipses of the sun and moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod, and thus entered the assembly of the demigods, and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moon and sun, however, because of permanent animosity toward Rahu, understood the situation. Thus Rahu was detected. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti, was able to bewilder all the demons, but Rahu was so clever that he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohini Murti was cheating the demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat down in the assembly of the demigods. Here one may ask why the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effects of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verses. The moon and sun, however, were always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus, when Rahu entered the assembly of the demigods, the moon and sun immediately detected him, and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead also became aware of him. Part of pujas is to do the Navagraha, a little bit of worship for each one of the nine planets that are said to control one's destiny. And there's a shloka for each one of them, Japa Kushama Sangasam, for the sun, Dahi Gahabas, Sira Dhanava Sambadam, for the moon. And Rahu is Adakaya Mahavira Chanda Dita Kavadanam, Sinika Sutam Rudam, Tam Rahum, for Namami Aham. Ada means like not whole, means half. Ada, what is it? And then, but don't make a mistake. Adakayam Rahu Sutam Mahavirya. Just because Rahu has been incapacitated or beheaded by Mohini Murti, don't think that he's not a impressive adversary should he desire to make trouble in your life. Because even though he's Adakaya, he's only half, he's still Mahavirya. Means very, very potent, very, very potent. And Chandra Dicha Vardhanam means he's old since long time, even before this incident. He's an old enemy of the sun and the moon, Chanda Virya, Vardhanam. They're enemies since long, long time ago. And if you have an enemy, you're always thinking about that enemy. You can't get them out of your mind, you know. Sometimes, not in the assembly of devotees, but in the assembly of non-devotees, sometimes you'll see someone looking at you very hard from all the way across the room. It means they have enmity towards you and they can't get you out of their mind. They're thinking all the time of how to trip you up. So even though the situation had deteriorated somewhat because of the presence of Varuni, the nectar itself, and then as we're going to see, one of the byproducts of the ocean of milk was also intoxicants, like Varuni Devi, the god of intoxicating liquors, was produced from the ocean. And the demons, everybody was getting something. Kastuba Gem came, that came to Lord Vishnu. Aravata, the elephant, came, that went to Indra. The Sarabi cow came, that went to the Brahmins. Havardani means with the ghee you can do havans, sacrifices. And none of these things, the demons were particularly interested. I'll pass on that, I'll pass on that, I'll pass on that. They weren't interested in the Sarabi cow because they don't do any sacrifices. And they just as soon eat abominable things as eat things cooked with ghee. What was it that Prabhu said yesterday? Urvasi only stayed with Parava only under condition that she not be served anything unless it's cooked in ghee. That was the condition. So the Brahmins are very enthusiastic to take the Sarabi because now they could do lots and lots of sacrifices. But the demons, you know, they could care less about it. And they could care less about so many things. And those things were variously distributed. And after a while, demons, hey, what about us? You know, what do we get? You know, we worked hard. We helped, you know, turn the ocean. So what do we get? And then finally, Varuni came. Aha, yeah, we got it. I get dibs on that. I want the Varuni. And so probably there'd been some liberal sampling also. Let me see if this is good quality, you know. Let me just test it out here to make sure we've got good quality. And what happens is when you're intoxicated, your senses are dulled. You lose sharpness of perception. Everything becomes blurred. It's a sedative. And in this kind of deteriorating circumstance, kind of like party atmosphere, no one noticed that Rahu was... got himself in line to receive a portion of the nectar. No one noticed that is except for the sun and the moon, for whom Rahu was an enemy, and they were always aware, no matter where Rahu was in the room, you know, they'd always mark him like that, you know. And so even though he looked like a demigod, he was disguised as a demigod, they had been tracking him, and they knew that he was in fact who he was, and he was in the line, and in fact, in the process of drinking the nectar. So they tattletaled on him to Mohini. Hey, this guy is an imposter. And then Mohini threw her razor-sharp discus and then separated the head of Rahu from his torso. So he's Adakaya Mahavira. He's half person, but at the same time, Mahavira. He's very, very powerful. And when you do the... Navagraha, it's not necessary for Vaishnavas because wherever Krishna is involved, in fact, before you do the 9 shlokas and the akshita to the various grahas, there's a verse, Bashame viriram, Bashame chandakakaram, Mangalam ganasira, Buddhischa buddhischacharam, Rahume rahu grairam, Graha santaka graha, Navam navam devishanta, Nihagrahe. It says that if Krishna is on your side, nobody can harm you. So you have some stars like Rahu and Ketu and Shani who are malevolent. They will try to do you harm. But no matter how much they are your enemy, they can't do anything against you if Krishna's on your side. On the other hand, there are other of the grahas who are very friendly, like Bud is actually, Bud is very friendly. Obviously, Surya, Soma are very friendly. The vegetables are nourished by the rays of the moon and then the sunlight. So they're very benedictory. But even if you have, like Karna, he was the son of Surya, and Surya was looking out for him in every circumstance. But in spite of having no other than Surya as his benefactor, still, because Krishna wanted Karna dead, it was accomplished. Over and above all the protective measures that Surya put into place for his son. So we don't have to worry too much about doing Navagraha Puja, except when people are paying us a lot of rupees to go to their home and do it, and it helps to keep the lights on in the temple and buy boga for the devotees. So in this case, this whole pastime, we see this active principle. I've gotten so used in the last year or so to putting PowerPoints together that when I was just trying to think about this, I just automatically started drawing pictures off of Google and putting PowerPoints together. I'm sorry that you can't see this. But a picture's worth a thousand words, and pictures are very helpful in jogging your memory and also in helping you retain points that are made. So I always use PowerPoints on Sundays and for special classes, and I'm looking at one now that I just threw together this morning. But the whole turmoil began when Brihaspati, he took a garland. Let's see, he gave it to Indra. He gave a garland to Indra out of respect. Brihaspati is a guru. So then, actually, Indra's subordinate, Brihaspati is his guru, but some or other, the guru gave the garland to the disciple. But the disciple didn't show the proper deference. He gave it to his elephant. He got on his elephant and he gave the garland to an animal, Hati. And then the animal didn't value the garland and just threw it underfoot and trampled it. So then Brihaspati said that just like my offering to you has been cast down and trampled underfoot, you'll also be cast down from your Indraloka and you'll be overturned by Bali and the demons. And in fact, that happened. In all the fights, the demons were getting revived and the demigods weren't. And gradually, the demons got the advantage, and finally they're sitting, they're taking over in the heavenly planets. So what to do? And they themselves, because they were blocked by the curse of Brihaspati, who incidentally is one of the grahas. He's one of the grahas. Devanam cha rishanam cha guru kanchana sanivam bande bhuta tarayokasham brihaspatim pranamami aham. Devanam cha rishanam cha guru kanchanam. Guru kanchana, he's golden. He's golden complected. And he's the guru of the devas and the rishis. He's the guru of the good guys. The guru of the bad guys is also a graha. Hima kundamilanambam daityanam paramam guru sarva shastra vartanam bhargavam pramanami aham. He's white in color. Sarva shastra, he knows all the scriptures. And he's the guru of the demons. And his name is Sukracharya. So Brihaspati is actually one of the grahas. And now he's cursed Indra. He's cursed Indra that you can't get your kingdom back. And that curse is stopping Indra from taking remedial measures. And he can't do anything. So what do you do in a circumstance like that? What do you do? A big, powerful graha is blocking you. So you go to the Supreme, isn't it? Vishnu. You go to Lord Vishnu and appeal to him. And so the demigods went to Lord Vishnu. And this pastime is all about beauty. It's all about understanding beauty and its various aspects, its utilizations, and where it comes from. So when Lord Brahma and the demigods and Indra, they go to Vishnu, there's the following description of Vishnu. And this is the origin of beauty. This is where all other beauty comes from. It says that the blackish body of the Lord resembled a marakata gem. His eyes were reddish like the depths of a lotus. He's dressed in garments that are yellow like molten gold. His entire body is attractively decorated. And they saw his beautiful smiling lotus-like face, crowned by a helmet, bedecked with valuable jewels. The Lord has attractive eyebrows, and his cheeks are adorned with earrings. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva saw the belt on the Lord's waist, the bangles on his arms, the necklace on his chest, and the ankle bells on his legs. The Lord is bedecked with flower garlands. He's decorated with the Kastuba gem. And he carries with him the goddess of fortune and his personal weapons like his disc and club. Said when the demigods thus saw the form of the Lord, they all immediately fell to the ground offering their obeisances. And in the prayers that they give subsequently, they acknowledge that all beauty originates with the Lord. And if anyone else exhibits beauty, it is only a reflection of the original beauty of the Lord. Just like in Utah, we have chandeliers in the temple room. And they're not Austrian chandeliers. Austrian crystal, but they're Turkish crystal, which is kind of second best. Now, what makes a droplet in a chandelier valuable is the number of times it's cut. Because once the light comes in, it bounces, 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 bounces. And the more it's bouncing, the more beautiful arrangement of colors you get. Violets and greens and blues and purples and so on and so forth. But it's important to understand that the original light is from the sun. And it's only reflected through those gems. So Brahma, Shiva, they don't take personal credit for whatever qualities they have. But they say, we're just like gems. And some or other, the original beauty of the Lord is reflected through us. We were talking about this in one of the seminars recently in connection with Christian preachers. They talk in their lectures, God, 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 God. Just like if I were to say, I don't actually know this devotee's name. But maybe I would try to pretend I knew his name. So I would say, Jai Prabhu, good to see you, Prabhu. How are you, Prabhu? What's new in your life, Prabhu? Shall we take prasadam together, Prabhu? Let's go to. And after a while, he's going to think, he really doesn't know my name, does he? He's just faking it, right? So a lot of the Christians, you know, they talk about God, 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 God. And, you know, after having said God 17 times, you start to think, well, they don't really know who he is. They're just talking about some concept, you know, the way God should be, but they don't know him personally, to call him by name and so on and so forth. And then if you ask them, why don't you talk about God? They say, well, we talk about Jesus Christ. Everything we need to know about God is reflected in the activities of Jesus Christ. So he's God. But that's not true. I mean, that's just not true. He's godlike, he's godly, he's a pure devotee. And so he has many qualities. We know the 26 qualities of a pure devotee. But they're reflected. They don't originate in the devotee. They're reflected in the devotee. The devotee is like a jewel who reflects the qualities of God. But he doesn't possess them to the same quantity that God does. If you were to read the Lilamrita of Prabhupada, or Shruti Kirti's book, or Gurudas's book, or Hari Suri's book, and then say, now I don't have to read Krishna book. I know everything I need to know about God. That's not true. That's not true. I mean, there's a purpose for reading about Prabhupada. And that purpose is to see how a pure devotee acts. How he's modeling pure devotional service for us. Because without seeing a model, we're not going to understand from books alone. There has to be a model there. Any of you who are a parent know this. You can tell your children to do something, but if you do the opposite, they're going to do what you do, not what you say. If you model bad behavior, it doesn't matter how many good precepts you give them, they're going to do what you do, not what you say. So when we read the Lilamritas and all the biographical material, and how fortunate are we, by the way? How fortunate are we? And even if you never met Prabhupada, he was here 30 years ago. There's 60 or 70 books by people that were with him, you know, 24 hours a day, one person or another person. There's so much information, so much that we can learn about how a pure devotee acts in recent history. If you're a Christian, it happened 2,000 years ago and there's only 32 pages. And not one of those people lived with Christ at the same time he was living. So in terms of being inspired by a godlike devotee, we're very, very fortunate to have the proximity and the access to materials that we do. But reading about the pure devotee is not a substitute for reading about God. Because naturally you want to know where all this comes from. Why is he what he is? And that would be the first thing that Prabhupada would tell you. First thing that Prabhupada would have told his early disciples is, you can be like me if you know God, the source of all my qualities. If you plug into God, then you'll also be like me. That was his whole allure that he told us over and over and again. We can be like him. His qualities are not unattainable. In fact, he wanted every one of his disciples to be a gem, a jewel, just like him. And for that purpose, the first thing he wrote after the Bhagavad Gita is the words of God. And then the Krishna book, which are all the pastimes of the Lord. So all qualities originate with God Himself, including beauty. Now Mohini, you may ask yourself why Mohini is not listed as an avatar or an incarnation. It would seem like she's right up there with the other Matsya, Korma, and the Sringa, because the world was in danger. She had bent herself to save the situation, all like that. And it's explained that she is actually a representation of the original beauty of God. She's not an expansion in that sense. She is actually a representation, a personification of the feminine beauty of God. And as such, it says her beauty surpassed even that of Lakshmi. Her beauty surpassed even that of Lakshmi. And her beauty was not real in our terms. Prabhu Ananda Nittai was talking yesterday about how we see a billboard. We see a billboard, and it's not even a woman. It's just paper with some paint on it. And yet we lose our equanimity. We become attracted to the billboard. What is it about the billboard that's so attractive? Well, first of all, it's bigger than life. It's not real, but because it's not real, it makes it even more attractive. Because real flesh and blood bodies, both men and women, have pimples, and blemishes, and they have rashes. And so that which is not real becomes even more attractive, because the whole illusion that we can become happy body to body is also not real anyway. So it might as well complement, that one illusion might as well complement itself with other illusions. And the bigger the illusion is, the more we fall for it. And so that billboard is bigger than life. And then also they've gone in Photoshop and they've taken out all the pimples. So if you were to see the same model, you wouldn't even be nearly as attracted, because they went and brushed her all up there for public display and so on and so forth. So Mohini was all the more attractive because she wasn't real. She wasn't flesh and blood. She was like you say, virtual reality. She had none of the flaws, you see. She had none of the flaws of embodied living beings, or even of expansions. The expansions, Lord, don't have flaws, but at the same time, they don't embody perfection to the same degree that Lakshmi does. When, Lord Brahma stole the cows and the cowherd boys and tucked them away, Krishna expanded himself and he became the cows and cowherd boys for 1 year. And the parents, both of the calves and the parents of the children, were more attracted. They were more attracted to those cows and those children than they were to their own cows and their own children. Because Krishna is the origin of all attraction, and he's not mortal. When Dhruva Maharaj got the darshan, Dhruva Maharaj immediately understood that amongst all the 8,400,000 species of life, what I'm seeing is not included. This form is not part of the 8,400,000 species of life. It's in its classification all by itself. So from being products of their byproducts of calves and boys, these all of a sudden were not byproducts, but they in fact embodied the original attractive qualities by which we all are attracted to one another in the first place. And so after a year of interacting and falling deeply, more deeply in love with their offspring than before, it came time for Krishna to do the switch again. And then their real sons and their real cows came home and they, why don't I feel the same? I mean, they felt parental affection, but it wasn't that same sublime, unlimited perfection that they'd felt in interacting with those expansions of the Lord. And Amala Nita yesterday talked about Jayadev. One time he went home and the Lord had taken the form of Jayadev and had dinner with his wife. So when he came home, the wife had already eaten. He said, "What's going on?" She said, "You just came." Who? So in fact, that imitation form was more attractive than the form itself. Jalandhar. He had a benediction that he could never be conquered as long as his wife was chaste. And there was no budging Tulsi in her chastity. There was no budging her in her chastity. She would never even think of another man. So Lord Vishnu, the only way to resolve the situation was for Lord Vishnu to take the form of Jalandhar. And even so, Tulsi, only for a moment was she distracted. But it actually had the effect of budging the rock-solid, Gibraltar-like chastity of Tulsi. Nobody else could have disguised themselves as Jalandhar, and Tulsi would have even given them a second glance. But when Vishnu did it, only he had the original potency, the flawless charisma and personality to even so much as for a moment cause Tulsi to regard him as her husband. And then, of course, then that was the insertion for getting Jalandhar killed. So Krishna is the origin of all beauty. And I think that one of the reasons I have to come to India once a year in order to even be able to continue preaching in the Western countries is because in India and in Krishna consciousness, I mean, not just India, but ISKCON, we have such a passion for God. We have such a passion and such a devotion and such a longing to be with Krishna, to be reunited with Krishna. Whereas in the Western countries, there's not that passion because they don't know anything about God. They're not allured by his beauty. They think he's an old man with a beard. That's what the Westerners think of God, as an old man with a beard. So how attractive are you going to be? If the All India cricket team took the field for the championships and they were all 65-year-old guys, would you buy a ticket? Would you buy a ticket? You know? If you had the Bombay All-Star basketball team from, 1956, would you be interested in going? Practically speaking, youth sells, and age, we put it on the shelf. When Michelangelo painted God as an old man on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, Prabhupada called that imaginative iconography. Imaginative iconography. He speculated, which is actually one of our regular principles that we try to keep to, not speculating, but he speculated, or at least whoever was paying him to do that, speculated that God is the oldest person, Purana Purusha, so therefore he's got to have white hair, he's got to have wrinkles and a beard. And also in the Western countries, the idea that you only get wisdom after some time. And when you're young, you're stupid. Only later on do you get wisdom. So if God is all-knowing, he's got to be old, right? But the problem there is that God doesn't become old. He doesn't become wise. He's always God. He's always omniscient, even if he's exhibiting a small child's form. He's still all-powerful. He's still omniscient. And because he is all-powerful, how is he going to be forced to grow old? Does anyone here want to grow old? I'm the only one. No, I don't either. I would much rather rewind back to a 20-year-old body. No one wants to grow old, but so why are we growing old? Why am I this age when I'd prefer to be 16? Because I'm not, newsflash, I'm not God. I'm not in control. I'm not all-powerful. There's the effect of time on this body made of matter. However, matter and time are the energies of Krishna. They're subordinate to him. They have no sovereignty over him. He has complete control over them. So how is it that they, some or other, make God get white hair and wrinkles and things like that? They can't. There is no power above God. People say, well, if God created everything, who created God? Well, nobody created God. That's the definition. He created everything, no one created him. He controls everything, no one controls him. He dominates everything, no one dominates him. So if he doesn't want to grow old, he doesn't have to get old. Therefore, he's ever fresh, Navayovanam Cha. He spoke Bhagavad Gita in the 90th year of a 125-year sojourn on the planet. And he just looks like he's 16 years old. So God will never be old. He's youthful. But of course, if you come from a culture that speculates and then thinks that God's old, then you have no passion for going to be with him. You have no passion for that. In fact, if the truth be known, You'd probably rather stay here and watch the billboards of all the young people than to go to a place where the only guy on a billboard is looks like he's about 70. I mean, in the spiritual world, you know, everyone talks about God, everyone loves God, everyone pictures God, everyone sings His glories. Well, how much fun is that if he's an old guy? And why would you really want to go there? There wouldn't. I mean, you can say, yeah, yeah, I go to church and I read the Bible. And when everything here is taken away, when that time comes, when that time eventually comes, as it must come to all of us, yeah, I'd like to go to the spiritual world. But in the meantime, and that's the whole key, that's where they're really at, is the meantime, is the here and now. I might as well enjoy as much as I can, because actually the way that it's described, or rather the way that it's failed to be described, I'm not really on fire to get there. Imagine you're in the spiritual world, God's an old fellow, and you know, you can't shout, you can't yell, you can't play, you can't make any noise because God's taken his afternoon nap. You can't have any puris, pakoras, nothing deep fried, no ice cream. Nobody can have ice cream on their birthday because, you know, God's got to watch his cholesterol. And, you know. And we want to keep him with us as long as we can, you know. We want to keep him with us as long as we can. I had some cancer a year ago and some surgery and all. And so some of the members from Utah, they told me about a ashram here in Uruli Kanchana. I just heard last night you have a farm there too. Is that true? Uruli Kanchana? It's like 35 kilometers east of Pune. Anyway, there may be more than one Urlies. I hope I end up going to the right one, because they wanted to, you know, get me 2 weeks. It's only $6. It's only 300 rupees a day. Raw foods, yoga, mud massage. They said, go there, Chiru. Spend 2 weeks, because we want to keep you with us as long as we can in Utah. We want to keep you with us. So here's $200. Pay your fee and go there, you know, and eat raw foods and have Ayurvedic massage and so on and so forth. So I said, okay, give me a chance to go through Chopati on the way. That's really why I took up their offer, so that I could get your association on the way through and the way back, and maybe nip over to Tirupati as well. But we don't have to give God a special diet or give him special consideration so that we can keep him with us, you know, like that. He's abhyayam. He's imperishable and he's eternal. And so we're enthusiastic about being with God. And the sooner the better. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, why do I maintain this body? If I had any love for Krishna, I would just leave right away. And he didn't stay that long. He only stayed 48 years. It's a very short time. And during the last 24 years of his life, when he was experiencing love of God, he was leaving his body and coming back and leaving his body. And his body was experiencing all kinds of ecstatic symptoms, and eventually he just left out of love of God. He had no desire, and he called it fly-like existence. Fly-like existence. Kita, right? Kita means an insignificant bug, fly. Not even clean. You know. So he called this earthly life a kita, like kita prana. It's like a fly trying to maintain its life, you know, at all costs. Whereas with the passion that we get from hearing about the beauty of Krishna, we don't care to maintain this fly-like life. We want to go there, back to home, back to Godhead. So, Brihaspati blocked Indra. He's one of the grahas. He had bad intentions to Indra. He cursed him. So then we have the circumstances whereby Vishnu enters in and he overrides everything, all the obstacles that Brihadi put into place. We started observing Shivaratri. I think we were probably the first ISKCON temple maybe 10 years ago to celebrate Shivaratri. And we took all the criticism. So if any other temple is observing Shivaratri nowadays, You got us to thank because we got all the initial criticism for doing it. You know what I'm saying? Demigod worship and so on and so forth. And we were ruining Prabhupada's movement and so on and so forth. But hey, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he's the greatest devotee. I mean, if we celebrate the occasions for other pure devotees, you know, we can also celebrate the occasion for Lord Shiva because he's a pure devotee. We're not worshiping as a demigod. We're asking his mercy so we can get a drop of his bhakti and thus make advancement in devotional service. And so whenever we do anything that seems heretical in the eyes of certain parties, we make it completely Krishna conscious. And so of all the pastimes that Lord Shiva is involved in, the one we discuss is this. This is the one that we choose to discuss. And when you go through it blow by blow, it is overwhelmingly glorification of Vishnu. Overwhelmingly glorification of Vishnu. Because the point that's made here is it doesn't matter who's against you. If Krishna is for you, they can't do anything. So here's Brihaspati. He's against, but Krishna is for. So in the end, not only can they not do anything, but something wonderful comes out of it. You give Krishna lemons, and he gives you back lemonade. So, when Shiva and Brahma went to the Lord and they laid the difficulties before him, then he said, Arohae pi sandeha satya kalita gorva ahi mushikva deva. Mushika means mouse. Punar mushika bhava. Vishnu, he said, let's use the strategy of the snake and the mouse, Shrap and Mushika. Make a truce with the demons. They have the advantage. You have nothing to lose. So make an alliance with them because they're right now they're the stronger party. So make an alliance with them. And then I'll coach you. Don't worry. Trust me. Trust me. And I'll get you through it. It'll come out to be a very good result in the end. Better than originally. And the logic of the snake and the mouse was that a snake and a mouse were trapped in a basket. And they were both going to die. So the snake proposed to the mouse, you eat a hole out and then we'll escape. And the snake said, well, what's the use? Because then once you get out, you'll eat me. The snake said, no. We're going to die anyway, so let's just take this one step at a time. You know, I'll be appreciative. I'll be appreciative. Usually I'm very envious and I'm real hungry right now, but I'll show my appreciation. You know, so the mouse ate the little hole and they both went out and then the snake ate the mouse. So... So using the logic of the snake and the mouse, Lord Vishnu advised the demigods to make a truce with the demons. And he suggested they uproot Mandara Mountain and use it as a churning rod. And also get a lot of herbs and spice, throw it all in the ocean, and then churn it to get this amrita. So the demigods and demons, they picked up the mountain, and they're carrying the mountain, but they couldn't carry it. It was too heavy for them. And it was falling and it crushed them, many of them. So Lord Vishnu, this is the second intervention, right? This is what we say. This is a story that we tell at Shivaratri. The second intervention is he comes on Garuda. He revives the dead demigods and demons. And with one hand, he picks up the mountain. And then he just flies it into place and puts it there. Then the mountain immediately sinks. It weighs hundreds of tons, immediately sinks. So then the Lord expands, 800,000 miles wide, Kurma, 800,000 miles, maybe 80, no, I really think it's 800,000 miles wide, Kurma. And fortuitously, he has an itch on his back. And so he's positioned just in such a way to take them under a mountain, and he's not going to go away because he's feeling very nicely, the scratching of the itch like that. So now they need a rod. So again, now, so that's four interventions or three so far? Three interventions. So then they need something to wrap around the mountain to, you know, churn it. And so Vasuki is, the Lord suggests Vasuki. And then he tactfully says to Garuda, why don't you, you know, take a flight? Take a flight. Because Vasuki will be very nervous coming around when Garuda's in the neighborhood. So the Lord suggests to Garuda, now, thank you, now you just please go away and we'll bring in Vasuki. So they brought in Vasuki. They started churning, but it's like, whoa, wobbling. It's wobbling. There's nothing to support it up top. So then the Lord appears in a thousand-armed form and holds it at the tip. And that way it can turn without careening here and there. And then, of course, the demons are placing themselves at the head of the serpent. And the serpent is breathing fire and ashes. And so they're losing their strength. They're losing their strength. They can't go on. So the Lord causes a rainfall, a nice cooling rain. Clouds come and rain. They get their strength revived. And after some time, then again, they lose their strength. So then the Lord enters into the demigods as the mode of goodness. He enters into the demons as the mode of passion. And he enters into Vasuki as the mode of ignorance. And it lets them have some more. Then they go some more along. And still, they still can't do it vigorously enough to produce the nectar. So finally, the Lord just does it himself. Finally just does itself. So what is that, 9 or 10 times? Now once he starts turning, then they get this halhala poison. It's the first byproduct. After it says like Parichanaya Sadunam Vinashya Tudushkritam. Actually you gotta Vinashya Tudushkritam before you can Parichanaya Sadunam. Right? Just like before you can plant good seeds in the khet, the agricultural field, you have to get rid of the bad seeds first. Then you can plant the good seeds. So actually Krishna has to annihilate the demons before Yudhishthira can be king. So in the same way, there has to come poison first before you get all the desirable things as well. And then because Lord always likes to give credit to his devotees, that's his nature. He got Arjuna all the credit for winning the Kurukshetra war, even though he was really the power behind it. So he asked Lord Shiva, he says, could you drink this poison? And Lord Shiva says, of course I can. I'm a devotee. That's what I'm here for. I'm glad you asked me. That's what I do. I carry out your orders. And Shiva means who is compassionate, auspicious, and who saves other living beings. So Lord Shiva was only too delighted to take the order of the Lord on his head and then drink the poison and get the credit for saving the universe. So 9 instances of the intercession of Lord Vishnu and 1 instance of Lord Shiva coming in. And he's coming in because Lord Vishnu asks him and he's describing himself as a servant, all too willing to do the bidding of the Lord. So this is the story that we tell on the occasion of Shivaratri. In spite of Mandara Mountain's worth of criticism. After getting the poison out of the way, then, as I mentioned, the Sarabi cow was produced. Demons had no interest in that. It was given to the Brahmins. Uchashrava, the horse, was given to Bali Maharaj because he was the head of the demons. They gave him the horse, Uchashrava. Arvata went to Indra. Kushtubha jewel went to the Lord. Apsaras were produced. They went to the heavenly planets. Lakshmi came out and she chose Lord Vishnu as her husband. Varuni, the goddess of drinking and intoxication, came out. They gave that to the demons. And then finally, the reason that it was all mounted in the first place, the operation was engaged upon, is Dhanvantari came. And he's a part of Vishnu, and he carried the pot with the nectar in it. And of course, being who they were, lusty and greedy and impatient and disrespectful of the demigods, the demons took the pot, they grabbed it, and they started running away with it. And they would have been okay. They would have had a clean getaway except for one thing. They started fighting amongst themselves. They couldn't just organize it nicely and share equally. It's like Prabhupada was talking about the materialistic, all the documents that we have, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and all like that. He said it's just thieves to divide up the booty nicely. You know, they steal God's property. They call it India. They call it America. They call it Russia. It's God's property. They falsely appropriate it. And then they write a constitution about how to divide up the stolen goods fairly. So they had some arguments and disagreements there. And at this time, again, now this is, I think, 10 times the Lord has come in to override the curse of Brihaspati and create lemonade from lemons. He appears as Mohini. And Mohini is not an avatar. She is the embodiment of the pure, flawless beauty of the Supreme Personality of God Himself. So everybody totally loses it. Even it's described later on, Lord Shiva couldn't control his senses when he saw Mohini, and he began chasing her all over the universe. So no one was immune except for Krishna Himself. The confectioner is not attracted by sweets. So only one who was immune was Krishna Himself. And the least immune, the most affected, were the demons, because that's what they live for. That's what they live for. That's what gives them inspiration. And they immediately look to Mohini as like, I mean, we look to Prabhupada, and the Christians look to Jesus Christ, you know, the Buddhists look to Buddha, and the demons look to a prostitute to save them. We trust Prabhupada, we trust Jesus, and they trust a prostitute. And she even told them. They said, we can't, let's give her the pot, let her decide what to do. And she said, I'm a prostitute, I'm warning you. And they just laughed. They just thought, oh, already we're getting this, you know, give and take, you know. We're already at first base. They only took that as a sign of encouragement, you know, that she's talking to us so familiarly. But they should have taken it the other way, that you're going to be cheated. That's what happens when a lady like that talks to you familiarly, means that she's setting you up. But the demons were only too willing to be set up. And she said, I'll take it, but you're going to have to do whatever I say. And they didn't want to jeopardize, you know, the chances later on. And so they just sat there very meekly, uncharacteristically, meekly, while she started giving it to the demigods instead. And they didn't want to, they were afraid to say anything because they didn't want to jeopardize any possible relationship in the future. And she just gave it all and passed it out to all the demigods. And in the meantime, while this was being dispensed amongst the demigods, they were all lined up. Rahu got into the line, disguised as a demigod. And then he was identified by the sun and the moon. And he was beheaded. So it's explained here in this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam that of all the various incarnations of the Lord, Narada... Narada, Varaha, and Buddha, they're specially empowered to create faith in people. Narada, Varaha, and Buddha, they awaken faith in a godless population. That's their particular empowerment. Rama and Dhanvatari, they exemplify the fame of Godhead. Said that Rama will, as long as there's oceans and mountains, the name of Rama will live on. There's no, the fame of Rama is a direct embodiment of the fame quality of Krishna. And then Dattatreya, Matsya, the four Kumaras, and Kapila, they personify the transcendental knowledge of the Lord. Nara, Narayan, Rishi, they personify the vairagya opulence of the Lord, the renunciation opulence of the Lord. And the beauty opulence of the Lord is personified by three. One is Mohini. Does anyone know what the other two are? Who are literally embodiments of beauty. Of course, there, one of them is feminine beauty. The other two are masculine. Does anyone know who the other two flawless, beautiful appearances of the Lord are? One is Balaram, and the other is Vamanadev. So Vamanadev, Balaram, and Mohini are an expression of the Lord's beauty. But this manifestation of the Lord's beauty was expressly for the idea of cheating the demons. And she herself says, Vishvashoneva, you shouldn't trust me. You shouldn't trust me. And in fact, that's good advice. Chanaka Pandit said, for women, And men who are similarly attached to sense gratification, one should never trust them. The nature of a woman who Mohini is personifying, this type of woman, is that they can be, I forget where I heard this, whether it's Chanaka, or I think it's Chanaka. This type of woman, you're going to be cheated. You're going to be cheated because this type of woman is not fixed, does not know the concept of fidelity. And the men are trying to, and the men are also usually in order to get a, they're already being faithless to someone else. So there's no, fidelity does not factor into this equation at all. In fact, such a woman, I don't want to say the word lady, it said that she can be embracing one man. Looking over the shoulder at another man and thinking of a third. So this is another reason why Mohini is not listed as an avatar, nor are there any temples to Mohini in India, nor do people who want to get purified in life, nor do they have many artists try to paint her. Because you see the dangers here. It says that lust is of such a nature that one should not be in a secluded place with one's wife, one's sister, or one's mother. Because the nature of lust is that one is becomes so bewildered, loses all of one's inhibitions, that in that lusty state, he fails to even discriminate between wife, sister, or mother. And so artists who are spiritualists, they don't go there. They don't presume to be able to paint the picture of Mohini and not be distracted from their spiritual vows. There's that artist, I don't know, Pygmalion. He did a sculpture, and then some other the sculpture came to life and he fell down. I don't know the whole story. So the artist, you don't flirt with disaster. You don't flirt with disaster. You don't light a fire and at the same time pour water on it. So very few artists. And when I went on Google, I found a couple of pictures of Mohini, but there's really not too much out there. Thank God. So those are my notes, and if you'd have been looking at the PowerPoint, we would have shown the last picture, the one deity form of Mohini that I found available. And I shared all the points that I could unearth with you. Do you have any questions or comments? Nothing? All right. So the class should end by now, isn't it? I mean, so I guess we'll end the class now then, shall we? All right. Thank you. Hare Krishna.